Sri Lankan authorities are warning of more possible attacks, this time involving people disguised in military uniforms. They've stepped up emergency security measures, with police carrying out random body checks and searches in Colombo. The president has also banned all kinds of face coverings that might hide people's identities. This emergency law, which takes effect from today, prevents Muslim women from veiling their faces. Professor Sue Vendrini Pereira is a John Curtin Distinguished Professor at Curtin University, and she's convening an upcoming seminar on recent terrorist attacks. She joins us now. Professor, welcome.
Thank you.
What do you make of this new ban on face coverings?
Well, I've only just heard about it, but it seems to me that there's little justification for this, given that the bombers who've been discovered so far were not women, did not have their faces covered. So I'm surprised that this should be one of the moves the government has taken.
What kind of impact could it have?
I wonder about it, because it does put the local communities, local Muslim communities, under pressure. And I wonder what kind of consultation the government has done before it did this. We know that in the months and maybe even longer leading up to these attacks, local Muslim communities kept telling the government that there were people they needed to watch out for. In Kantankudi, where the chief, the person who's said to be the mastermind came from, local Muslim people warned officials that there were extremist ideologies developing, and the government seems to have paid no attention to these warnings. So I wonder whether they've actually consulted with local Muslims before they came out with these recommendations.
Given the recent attacks and the possibility of more violence, what would you say the government should focus on?
The government should focus on the causes of these violence. I myself am a Sri Lankan Tamil Christian. My family were all going to church on that Easter morning, and we were lucky that they were not caught up in this horrific violence. But one of the things that came up for us when we heard these stories and we started to get more and more information about what was going on is that there had never been any history of violence between Muslims and Christians in Sri Lanka. So where does this come from? One of the things that we were aware of, have been aware of over several years, is the fact that both these communities have been targeted by Sinhala extremism, to which the government seems to have turned a blind eye on many occasions. And we were also aware of a climate of Islamophobia that was certainly, once again, I think if not fostered by the government, it was condoned. It was often condoned. There was serious violence last year, the year before. These were condoned. So I think that what I would like to see is not some kind of knee-jerk reaction where you go after the most vulnerable, the most obvious, but some kind of serious reflection on the kind of terrain, the kind of social terrain that has been created in the years since the war. It seems to me that we have lost an opportunity to build a society that could actually be multi-religious, multi-ethnic in the years since the war, partly by allowing Sinhala Buddhist extremism to flourish.
You're co-convening a symposium to gain a better and deeper understanding of the Christchurch and Colombo terrorist attacks. Mm. What do you hope to get out of the seminar?
As you said, we hope to get a better understanding, but we also hope to ask, as writers, as intellectuals, as artists, how we can contribute to this, to understanding better and to responding better. So we actually convened this symposium. We thought of this symposium 5 weeks ago, a week after the Christchurch attacks. And we really wanted to think about this idea of one of us. How do we define us and them in this kind of climate of exclusionary identifications. The Prime Minister of New Zealand, we thought, showed extraordinary insight, profound kind of insight, when she said of the victims, "They are us. The man who did this is not us." So we really thought that this phrase, which has a long cultural history in English, "one of us," we really thought we should explore the history of this phrase and see how it plays out in these current contexts. How do terms like "an Australian," which we have come to hear so frequently in our political discourse, how do they play into this notion of "one of us"? But we also want to address how in our everyday lives, in our dealings with each other on a daily basis, we can combat those kinds of destructive identifications of us and them.
Thank you so much for your time this evening.
You're welcome.
Professor Sue Vendrini Pereira is a John Curtin Distinguished Professor at Curtin University, and she's convening a seminar on recent terrorist attacks. This is RN Drive.